Youth by Leo Tolstoy. Translated by C.J. Hogarth. Section 1. Chapters 1 through 4. Chapter 1. What I consider to have been the beginning of my youth. I have said that my friendship with Dmitri opened up for me a new view of my life and of its aim and relations. The essence of that view lay in the conviction that the destiny of man is to strive for moral improvement, and that such improvement is at once easy, possible, and lasting. Hitherto, however, I had found pleasure only in the new ideas which I discovered to arise from that conviction, and in the forming of brilliant plans for a moral, active future, while all the time my life had been continuing along its old, petty, muddled, pleasure-seeking course, and the same virtuous thoughts which I and my adored friend Dmitri, my own marvelous Mishya, as I used to call him to myself in a whisper, had been wont to exchange with one another, still pleased my intellect, but left my sensibility untouched. Nevertheless, there came a moment when those thoughts swept into my head with a sudden freshness and force of moral revelation, which left me aghast at the amount of time which I had been wasting, and made me feel as though I must at once, that very second, apply those thoughts to life, with the firm intention of never again changing them. It is from that moment that I date the beginning of my youth. I was then nearly 16. Tutors still attended to give me lessons. Saint Jerome still acted as general supervisor of my education. And, willy-nilly, I was being prepared for the university. In addition to my studies, my occupations included certain vague dreamings and ponderings, a number of gymnastic exercises to make myself the finest athlete in the world, a good deal of aimless, thoughtless wandering through the rooms of the house, but more especially along the maidservants' quarter, and much looking at myself in the mirror. From the latter, however, I always turned away with a vague feeling of depression, almost of repulsion. Not only did I feel sure that my exterior was ugly, but I could derive no comfort from any of the usual consolations under such circumstances. I could not say, for instance, that I had at least an expressive, clever, or refined face, for there was nothing whatever expressive about it. Its features were of the most humdrum, dull, and unbecoming type, with small gray eyes which seemed to me, whenever I regarded them in the mirror, to be stupid rather than clever. Of manly bearing I possessed even less, since, although I was not exactly small of stature, and had moreover plenty of strength for my years, every feature in my face was of the meek, sleepy-looking, indefinite type. Even refinement was lacking in it, since, on the contrary, it precisely resembled that of a simple-looking mujik, while I also had the same big hands and feet as he. At the time, all this seemed to me very shameful. Chapter 2. Springtime. Easter of the year when I entered the university fell late in April, so that the examinations were fixed for St. Thomas's week, Easter week, and I had to spend Good Friday in fasting and finally getting myself ready for the ordeal. Following upon wet snow, the kind of stuff which Karl Ivanitch used to describe as a child following its father, the weather had for 3 days been bright and mild and still. Not a clot of snow was now to be seen in the streets, and the dirty slush had given place to wet, shining pavements and coursing rivulets. The last icicles on the roofs were fast melting in the sunshine. Buds were swelling on the trees in the little garden. The path leading across the courtyard to the stables was soft instead of being a frozen ridge of mud, and mossy grass was showing green between the stones around the entrance steps. It was just that particular time in spring when the season exercises the strongest influence upon the human soul, when clear sunlight illuminates everything, yet sheds no warmth, when rivulets run trickling under one's feet, when the air is charged with an odorous freshness, and when the bright blue sky is streaked with long, transparent clouds. For some reason or another, the influence of this early stage in the birth of spring always seems to me more perceptible and more impressive in a great town than in the country. One sees less, but one feels more. I was standing near the window, through the double frames of which the morning sun was throwing its...